Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The Prosecutor's Podcast is brought to you by Progressive. Progressive helps you compare direct auto rates from a variety of companies so you can find a great one, even if it's not with them. Quote today at Progressive.com to find a rate that works with your budget. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations.
Guys, I think it's safe to say we all struggle with debt in one form or fashion. If you went to school, you probably have student loans. Maybe it's credit card debt. Maybe it's a mortgage. It's a little too hard to handle. And you're looking for ways to get that debt under control. A personal loan could be your solution. Loans usually come with fixed monthly payments, making them a simple way to help pay off things like credit card debt. Plus, loans usually have lower interest rates than credit cards do. And that's where Credit Karma comes in. It can help you find the best option for you. Paying down debt can be stressful, especially when you need to keep track of multiple monthly payments. If you're tired of juggling due dates, consolidating with a personal loan could be your answer. That way, you'll have just one due date a month, and Credit Karma can help you find the best option. Credit Karma uses your credit data to find loan offers that are personalized to you so you can have a better idea of what loan amount you can get approved for. And comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free. It won't affect your credit scores and could save you money. You can apply with more confidence today. And if you are ready to apply, head to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Go to creditkarma.com/loan offers to find the loan for you. That's creditkarma.com/loan offers.
Jennifer Harris disappeared from Bonham, Texas on Mother's Day 2002. The secrets in the Jennifer Harris case have been hidden for 20 years.
When someone disappears, you have to look at who would benefit from their disappearance.
What happened to Jennifer Harris, and who is responsible for her death? Coming May 10th, Final Days on Earth, Season 2, The Life and Death of Jennifer Harris. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the Prosecutors. Today on the Prosecutors, a 17-year-old girl is found burned to death in her Colorado home. Was it robbery gone wrong or a hate crime? Everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Prosecutors. I'm Brett, and I'm joined, as always, by my savage co-host, Alice.
Whoa. We're going there. Is it just because, I don't know, you've just been tearing it up on the road? You've been traveling, and you get home, and the first thing you do is go record with me, because I'm savage.
You're savage. You're fierce, Alice. I gotta save that one for a later episode.
Was Savage Garden anyone else's middle school crush? No, just me.
I like that song, Truly, Madly, Deeply.
It's a fantastic song. Like, that
defines middle school dances for me.
And then there's that other one that's like Chicka Cherry Cola or whatever.
Yes, indeed. But
I want you. I don't know if I need you.
All I'm saying is I don't really know what Savage Garden actually means. Like, what is a Savage Garden?
It's a garden that's dangerous, I guess. It's like pretty on the outside, but you go in there and you get savaged. It's
so
like
am love, I? Am Alice. I savage?
It's like love. You're like savage.
I'm not going to ask you to expound upon that.
I think our listeners understand exactly what I'm saying about that.
Oh, no. Thanks, Brett. Well, that's a very nice word.
You're welcome, Alice. You're welcome. Well, we have an important case today, one that deserves more coverage than it gets. We're going to talk about the murder of Maggie Long. This case was recommended to us by Sophie. So thank you, Sophie, for recommending this case. And it is one that was in the news a little bit last year when the FBI announced that they considered this a possible hate crime. Maggie is of Asian descent, and she was killed in a brutal murder in her Colorado home. And since it happened in 2017, people have wondered what could have motivated such a killing. And they've wondered if the story that we've believed to be true since the event, that this was a burglary gone wrong, where Maggie walked in on her killers while they were burglarizing her home, might not be the answer. It actually might be something a little bit more complicated than that. This is an unsolved case. It is a case that is relatively new, but it's one that needs answers. So we wanted to cover it in the hopes, as always, that somebody out there might know something and hear this case, and it sparks something in your mind that could lead to some sort of resolution here.
No, you're totally right, Brett. You know, when you hear the facts of this case, I think it's going to strike you, it's strange this case is not yet solved, because it seems like there should be a lot of evidence. It seems like this should be a case wherein there are good leads to follow up on and the police can make an arrest. But like Brett said, even though it happened about 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago, it still remains unsolved. And I am hoping that someone out there knows something, or that renewed attention is focused on this case. As we've talked about before, as time moves on, witnesses' memories fade, and also just general public's interest in a case fades. And renewed attention on this case, I think, can really benefit this particular unsolved case.
100%. I think so as well. So let's dive into this one and see what we can do. I do want to say there's not a lot of information on this case. If you really want to dive into it, your best bet is to look at the local coverage. The local people in Colorado have done a really good job on this case. The national stuff, not so much. And there is a post on Reddit we're going to link to that's done a good job of bringing a lot of that local coverage together. It's written by Visible Literature, and I hope you will check that out. Our story begins in December 2017. Maggie Long was a senior at Platte Canyon High School in Bailey, Colorado, a small town about 50 miles southwest of Denver. She was the child of immigrants. Her parents were a Chinese-Vietnamese couple who had come to the United States with absolutely nothing. They started working at a local restaurant. Before long, they owned the restaurant, and then many more. They invested their money in real estate, and soon they had a home to envy. 6,000 square feet on 27 acres of woodlands, with a six-car garage and a separate bungalow for a caretaker. It was the definition of the American dream, but that dream would turn into a nightmare on December 1st, 2017. It was Christmas time, and Maggie's school was hosting an annual concert. Maggie loved theater, and she was excited to help with the show. She'd been assigned to the VIP lounge, and as the volunteers were getting things ready, Maggie told her friends she was going to go home, change clothes, and grab some cookies and water to pass out to the audience. She told them she would only be a minute. A couple hours later, Maggie's sister, Connie, arrived at the school for the concert. But when she did, instead of finding Maggie, she found her concerned friends who wanted to know if she'd seen her sister. Connie knew immediately that something was terribly wrong. At around that time, a call came in to the local 911 dispatcher. A person who was renting an extra room at the long house in the attic said that he heard someone breaking in. He heard arguing, and he believed they were trying to set the house on fire. That call came in at 7:01 p.m. 10 minutes later, the police arrived. There were two vehicles at the home, the renter's and Maggie's. The house was on fire. When the fire was put out, police would find the smoldering remains of Maggie Long. Although details are scarce, police would later say that she was set on fire while still alive. But we wouldn't learn that or really anything else for quite some time. It would take more than a year for the police to finally give details about the crime, the suspects, and what happened in that house. Many fear that by then, though, it may have been too late. Alice, I gotta tell you, my whole life I've suffered from sinus headaches and allergies, and I hate it. The pain, the congestion, the pressure, and it doesn't matter. You can take pills and they might work a couple times, but then it's as if nothing will help. I am so glad to introduce our listeners to Clear Up. Tivic Clear Up is a revolutionary, compact, handheld device that provides a safe and drug-free way to clear congestion and relieve sinus pain. One of the significant benefits is that Clear Up can be used as often as needed at work, in the middle of the night, or while traveling. Relieving your pain and congestion has never been easier.
How does Clear Up work? How does a device treat pain? Will it work as well as medication? Here's the science. The Tivic Clear Up uses a proprietary waveform of microelectric currents and specific frequencies to target inflammation at the nerve, which results in shrinking swollen tissues in the sinus cavity. For a lot of users, Clear Up works when nothing else does. But it can also be used as part of a regimen you already have. Use it with your current allergy and pain medication or in replacement without the worry of drug interactions or chemical side effects. Clear Up provides a non-chemical, non-addicting, and non-drowsy solution to target pain and congestion at the source, not just masking the symptoms like most traditional products. Simply glide Clear Up slowly along the cheek, nose, and over the brow area for 5 minutes to experience quick relief of congestion and sinus pain for up to 6 hours. Give Clear Up a try with a 60-day risk-free trial. Go to TivicHealth.com and use promo code Prosecutors22 to receive $20 off plus free shipping on your Clear Up. Again, that's TivicHealth.com and promo code Prosecutors22 to receive $20 off plus free shipping on your Clear Up device.
Alice, if there are two things I love, it's true crime and video games. And that's why I am so excited to introduce one of our newest sponsors, June's Journey. I never get tired of a good whodunit and have a feeling that our listeners don't get tired of it either. And with June's Journey, you play as June Parker, an amateur detective investigating a series of mysteries full of twists and turns around every corner. You'll put your powers of observation to the test, sharpen your sleuthing skills, and relish the thrill of solving the case.
It's so much fun, Brett. I could barely put it down because it's just a thrilling adventure where you are the starring role, and it's full of hidden clues and immersive scenes with danger and romance in full force. It's like you're going through and you're playing the game, but then there's also a story that's happening at the same time. So it's kind of like watching a show while playing a game. And whether you're craving a good mystery or just need to get away for a while, June's Journey is the perfect game for you. Sit back, relax, and let your inner Sherlock escape to the glamorous roaring 20s. You'll search for hidden clues to solve mystery after mystery across thousands of vivid scenes, and with new chapters every week, there's always a new case waiting to be cracked. You'll never get bored. There is a detective in all of us. Find your inner detective. Download June's Journey free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. But as you said, there isn't a lot of information here, so let's dive straight into the timeline. On Friday, December 1st, 2017, Maggie is set to volunteer at her school's annual winter concert. She's working, as Brett said, in the VIP section. Her mother has plans to work late at one of the restaurants the family owns, while her father is in California inspecting a piece of property the family is considering purchasing. At 3:30 p.m., Maggie tells her friends at school that she will be right back. She's going to make the 20-minute drive to her home to pick up drinks and cookies for the VIP section of the concert. At about 4 p.m., Maggie would have arrived at her home based on the distance from her school to home.
And I just want to stop there for a second, because if Maggie gets home at 4 p.m. and she interrupts a burglary, then it's going to be another 3 hours until the 911 call comes in. That is interesting to me. I think there's this timeline, some of it doesn't make a lot of sense. And it doesn't make a lot of sense with what we're told. As Alice said, and as we're going to repeat many times, the details are very scarce here. But it makes you wonder, did Maggie walk in on a burglary? Did the burglar show up a little bit later? How exactly did this go down? The timing seems a little strange.
And especially the timing seems strange because if Maggie did not walk in on a burglary at around 4 o'clock, her plan, according to her friends, was really to stop in for a minute. Let's say a little bit longer. Let's say it takes her 10 minutes to change clothes, grab the cookies and the water, and get back in the car. Maybe 20, 30 minutes. And so anything that may have happened should have happened in the 4 to 4:30 p.m. range, because based on Maggie's own words, she probably should have been on the road again at the latest by 4:30. But it isn't until 7:01 p.m. that the tenant living in the attic apartment at their home calls the police to say that there are people in the house breaking things and attempting to start a fire. This seems to be happening in real time. So if this is true, if in fact the tenant hears people breaking things downstairs, it would have been 3 hours after Maggie would have returned home. And Maggie, again, based on her own words, was not planning on being at the house for 3 hours. Now, at 7:12, first responders arrive at the home. In other words, pretty much as soon as the 911 calls comes in, the police respond and get to the home.
And just to stop you one more time, we're thinking about this timeline. So these people, let's assume to make the timeline as short as possible, as charitable as possible, that Maggie gets there and they aren't there yet. And so she goes inside, she's changing clothes, she's grabbing the cookies, she's getting the water, she's just about to go back out when the burglars come in. So she doesn't interrupt them, they interrupt her. Assume that happens, so that's 4:30. They're then there, as Alice said, for 2.5 more hours. The tenant calls the police at 7:01. But despite the fact they've been there for 2.5 hours and the fact that apparently they don't know about the tenant, right? They haven't done anything to the tenant. They don't seem to know that he's there. They nevertheless are gone in 11 minutes. They're out of there in the 11 minutes before the police arrive. So, I mean, this is in some ways, it's not a tight timeline. It's a very, you know, almost lackadaisical timeline, a relaxed timeline for these burglars. But then it just so happens that they leave just as the tenant's finally calling the police and manage to get away before the police get there. I mean, it's a interesting timeline.
And, you know, we've already noted this kind of large property that the Longs live on. They live on 27 acres of woodlands. So it's not like they have neighbors right next door. And, you know, even Maggie's school is 20 minutes away. So it's not particularly close. I think the attractiveness of this property is that it's kind of situated privately in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by woods. And so for these burglars to have made it off the 27 acres undetected into another town when police are racing towards this property that is situated in a place where there are no other things situated there. So it should raise awareness, it should raise alarm bells for anyone seeing someone coming out of this property, because there should be nothing in this property but the Long's property. But they're somehow able to get away in 11 minutes from this place. We mentioned Connie earlier. At 7:20 p.m., so about 8 minutes after the first responders arrive at the longhouse, Connie, Maggie's sister, arrives at the house to find that first responders are putting out the fire at her house. Remember, Connie knew right away when Maggie's friends asked Connie where Maggie was that something was wrong. So let's say Connie leaves school immediately. So she would have left school around 7 or 6:50 something and rushed home because she suspected something was terribly wrong if Maggie was not at school. And she arrives essentially right after the police do. At 8:12 p.m., there had been multiple fires that were started around the home. And they've now all been extinguished. So it took the first responders approximately an hour to put out these fires. This is interesting. The fact that there are multiple fires around the home means that it took some time to light each of these fires. Of course, you can have accelerants that would make the fires burn faster, but this isn't the situation where someone set, say, one room on fire and fled. And what we have here, remember, is the tenant calling at 7:01, thinking that someone was trying to start a fire. Assuming there's not already a raging fire, because you would think the tenant upstairs would be able to either smell things or hear things if fires had already been started. So in that 11 minutes, these intruders set multiple fires all around the home before making their escape and being undetected by first responders. Now at 9:30 p.m., Connie posts on Facebook asking for volunteers to help search for Maggie. At the same time, the sheriff's office tells the news that there will be no searches for Maggie as they aren't necessary and no explanation is given. This, I think, is really interesting. If Connie is asking on Facebook for volunteers to search for Maggie, it means that the police haven't told the family that there isn't a need for a search and they haven't explained anything to the family.
And as we're going to mention, we're going to get into it a little bit later. In fact, the police will post on Facebook that they have not found Maggie and she is not in the home.
That's very interesting. Let's keep moving on the timeline. There's not much more. The next morning, December 2nd at 9:58 a.m., the coroner arrives at the Long House. And it isn't until 2 days after that, on December 4th, that the coroner confirms that the body found at the home is Maggie's, but that is not released to the press. Rather, a gag order is put in place by a local judge.
This case is just crazy in so many ways. We're going to talk about this gag order. The fact that a judge is putting a gag order in place 2 days into an investigation that hasn't even been declared a murder yet is crazy. I mean, this, everything that's happening around this crime makes no sense. And it is just mistake after mistake after mistake. I mean, this is one of those cases where the police and the prosecutor's office and even the judges really mess this one up. They mess it up from the beginning. And there's a reason that we're 5 years into this and we don't know who killed this young girl. And I'm not going to put all the blame on the police, but man, I mean, some weird stuff's happening here, and it just feels like it gets worse and worse. December 7th, 3 days after that, the gag order is lifted, thank goodness, and the sheriff issues a press release confirming that Maggie's body had been found in the house. Now, at this point, you know there's been a murder. Maggie's been murdered. Everybody knows it's a murder. You would expect the police would want to put out as much information as possible to the public. But instead, they don't give any information to the public. Instead, they put out the following BOLO, or be on the lookout. Here's what it says. Be on the lookout for a late model 90s to 2000 light-colored minivan, possibly driven by a white male in his 20s. Homicide occurred during an arson, and the suspect driver may have some flash burns, as well as gasoline taken from the house. A large case, AK-47, 2,000 rounds of ammunition of 7.62 caliber, and a 9mm Beretta. Please be advised the subject is considered armed and extremely dangerous. Now, this BOLO was put out to the police. It was only supposed to go to law enforcement, but someone messed up and released it to the public. This was a good thing, actually, because this was basically the only opportunity the police were going to have for figuring out who did this, actually getting a description out for the public to be paying attention to, looking for this vehicle. As Alice said, this is in the middle of nowhere. This is a very isolated place. So if you saw this vehicle that day, there's a really good chance it's connected to the murder. And that might be information that you could give to the police. But if the police never ask you and you don't know you're supposed to be looking for this vehicle, well, that's not going to be very helpful. But this bolo is accidentally released to the public, and obviously the press reports on it. Police are so upset by this, and it's unclear why they are upset about it. But rather than ask the public for help, they announce that they're going to need to reassess how to handle public information and get together with a task force to talk about it. And it's just, I don't know what they're thinking or why they're doing that, but that is the approach they're going to take in the early stages of this investigation. Essentially, the less information the public has, the better. They are putting a lid on this, and they're just not going to tell people anything.
Brett, what's unclear to me is when the family members were told that they believed Maggie was dead and burned in the house. That hasn't ever been clear to me.
It's not really clear to me either. I mean, it certainly was not that night. It certainly was not that night. And as we're going to talk about, even into the morning the next day, even though the coroner is there, the sheriff is still saying they haven't found a body. So it's not really clear to me exactly when they would have told the family this information.
The reason I point that out is because it seems that the sheriff's office at least has an inkling that Maggie has perished in the fire, because on the day that she goes missing and on the day of the fire, December 1st, they are actually telling the news no search is needed. They don't explain why, but you would only say that if you had some reason to believe searches would be fruitless.
So just looking at one of the articles that we're going to link to on the website, it looks like they told the family around midnight that night that they had found a body in the home. And at the time, obviously, the body was pretty badly burned, so I don't think they could say definitively that it was Maggie's body, but they had definitely found a body. They were pretty sure it was a female body, but they didn't even tell the family that until midnight. And so, I mean, at least they told them then. So in the weeks that follow, the police start collecting DNA samples, which would seem to indicate they may have some DNA in this case, though they've never said. They collect it from Maggie's family and from associates. Now, the reason to do this is not because you think the family or the associates are involved, but if you have DNA that you think may be related to the case, you want to go ahead and exclude all those people, because if you think you have DNA related to the case and it turns out to be her dad's DNA, well, that's obviously not the killer because he's in California. So you want to collect all the DNA that would be in the home sort of naturally, make sure it doesn't match any of those, hopefully it doesn't, and then doesn't necessarily mean it's connected to the killer, but there's a better chance that it will be. They set up a tip line and offer a reward for information related to Maggie's death. Though obviously, the best way to get information is to give information. You have to trigger something in someone's mind. And we talked about hold back information, and it's important. We don't need to know everything that happened at that house or everything the police have. But, you know, the fact, for instance, that one of the people who committed this crime may have been burned. We don't know why they think that, but, you know, whatever. They have reason to believe that, or maybe they're guessing. But the fact that they think that, if you have a friend who all of a sudden has a burn and there's no explanation for it, knowing that information connected to this crime over in, you know, the next town over in Colorado, maybe you call into the tip line. If you don't know that information, then you have no reason to think that your friend's burn has anything to do with the crime. And this is not, you know, Alice and Brett are so smart. This is basically Investigation 101. And the fact that the police didn't seem to get that or understand that at the time, I don't know. It's really inexplicable. On December 17th, on what would have been Maggie's 18th birthday, her friends hand out sandwiches to the homeless. This is what Maggie had planned to do that day, and it was the way they chose to honor her. And we haven't talked a lot about Maggie. And we often, on our show, we don't get a lot into the victims often. I mean, maybe that's a shortcoming. I don't know. But Maggie was described by everyone who knew her as very outgoing, very caring, the kind of person who would take her birthday and instead of celebrating herself, go out to hand out sandwiches to the homeless. I mean, that was the kind of person she was. And this is just sort of an example of that, that her friends, this was the best way to honor her, was to do something like that. And Maggie, by all accounts, was a great person. And, you know, no one deserves to be killed, but it makes it even more tragic.
And it makes it so tragic that she was killed just, you know, 2 weeks before her 18th birthday. She was, you know, a child on the cusp of a lot of, you know, at a point in your life when there's a lot of excitement and the world is your oyster, and her life was snuffed out much too early. And I think even more devastating is that this is currently still unsolved.
The Prosecutor's Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Let's face it, sometimes multitasking can be overwhelming. Like when your favorite podcast is playing and the person next to you is talking and your car fan is blasting, all while you're trying to find the perfect parking spot. But then again, sometimes multitasking is easy, like quoting with Progressive Insurance. They do the hard work of comparing rates so you can find a great rate that works for you, even if it's not with them. Give their nifty comparison tool a try, and you might just find getting the rate and coverage you deserve is easy.
All you need to do is visit Progressive's website to get a quote with all the coverages you want, like comprehensive and collision coverage or personal injury protection. Then you'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies all lined up and ready to compare. So it's simple to choose the rate and coverages you like. Press play on comparing auto rates. Quote at Progressive.com to join over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices may vary based on how you buy. We've got a very different kind of sponsor for this episode, The Jordan Harbinger Show, which is a podcast you really should be listening to. And I know that every day somebody tells you that you just have to listen to some podcast, and you nod and say, sure, and then you never listen to it. Don't let that happen here. Jordan's show, which Apple named one of its best of 2018, is aimed at making you a better informed, more critical thinker so you can get a sense of how the world actually works and come to your own conclusions about what's happening, even inside your own brain. I know you guys love true crime. There are some great true crime episodes that you can check out, including find out Amanda Knox's story from her own lips, or learn how Sammy the Bull Gravano worked with a mob.
Each episode is a conversation with a different fascinating guest, and when I say there's something for everyone here, I really mean it. In one episode, Jordan talks to a hostage negotiator from the FBI who offers techniques on how to get people to like and trust you. Another episode tells the story of a cinematographer who discovered a lost city in the jungle and made one of the most important archaeological finds of the century. His episodes are loaded with bits of wisdom that you can use to legitimately change your mind and improve your life right away. We really enjoy this show, and we think you will as well. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, February 7th, 2018, Park County Sheriff Fred Wegener, along with state and federal investigators, hold the first press conference on the Maggie Long case. So, they've released a press release earlier, but this is the first press conference in February. They announce a reward increase from $15,000 to $20,000. They show photographs of a green safe, a Beretta 9mm handgun, an AK-47 style rifle, and jade figurines that were taken from the Longs' home the day Maggie was killed. Wegener insists the public is not in danger. Just to give you some idea of what was stolen here. Despite the fact that these perpetrators were apparently in the home for at least 3 hours, maybe longer, all they took was a green safe, and it varies on the size of this safe. Some people call it a small green safe. Some of the pictures make it look like it's a little bit larger, a little unclear. The Beretta 9mm handgun, an AK-47 style rifle. So it's not an actual AK-47. It's not an automatic rifle. It's basically a semi-automatic rifle that looks like an AK-47 in much the same way that an AR-15 looks like the M-16 that the United States military carries. Same way you have rifles that look like AK-47. So it's that, basically. Jade figurines, which supposedly are pretty small. They had some jade figurines. And 2,000 rounds of ammunition. If you don't shoot, you may think that's a lot. It's not. It's two cases. It was all ammunition for the AK-47. You go through that pretty fast if you take it out to the range or whatever. So not a lot was stolen, and not a lot of... It's unclear exactly how valuable these jade figurines were. Probably not that valuable, but not a lot was stolen from the home. And this was, as we've said, the family was well off. They had a nice place. They had a lot of electronics. They had a lot of jewelry. They had a lot of valuable things there. None of that was taken. You had the guns. You had the safe. Unclear what was in the safe. Some jade figurines and some bullets.
They had Maggie's car there that was still found on site that wasn't taken, nor was the renter's car.
Right. They could have taken her car. And, you know, it's the other thing that's weird about this, it's unclear exactly how many people were there and how many vehicles were there. On May 4th, 2018, so 3 months later, police release a sketch of a suspect and photos of a van and a truck that they say are similar to vehicles seen in the area at the time of the murder. So it's unclear how connected the van and the truck are to the home. Were they just seen in the area? Were they seen leaving the driveway? Alice mentioned the driveway before. It's a quarter of a mile long. I mean, it's a long driveway, sort of heading out into this ranch where the family lived. So it's possible that someone saw it leaving. I mean, you almost imagine, it's like in the movies. You know, in the movies, they always call the police, and your heroes are in their car, and they're leaving the scene right as the police are getting there, and they actually pass the police. Like, three police cars will be heading to the scene, and our heroes in their van will be driving away. It's almost like you imagine that. Like, the police were passing these people on the road, or coming in right as they're leaving the property, and just no one bothered to stop them. Which, a lot of times, the police actually will do that. If the police are on their way to a scene, and there's multiple police officers, multiple cars, one of them will peel off and stop traffic that's really close to the area just to make sure that whoever's in that vehicle is not related to the crime. If they saw this van leaving the property, they didn't do that. But we don't know. We have no idea where this description of the van comes from, where the description of the truck comes from, or where the sketch comes from. Why it took until May to release a sketch of a suspect, I don't know. So January 28, 2019, Sheriff Wegener, who had led this investigation, finally, blessedly retires. And the new sheriff, Tom McGraw, takes over and immediately changes strategy completely. He holds a press conference where, for the first time, it's announced that the police believe that, in fact, there were three men involved in the crime. The police released sketches of these three men. Those sketches will be up on the website. They announced that the men spent significant time in the house with Maggie, which is inevitable, right? I mean, we don't know why they say that or what evidence might have led them to believe that. But as Alice and I have said, just looking at the timeline, they had to have spent hours in the home with her, which is interesting for a couple reasons. These people, if they are robbing this home, I mean, they are some brazen people, because usually if someone shows up, even if you kill them, even if they come in and they see you and the burglary is ruined and you kill them to keep them from identifying you, you then get out of there. You don't hang around, right? So these people, you have to believe, hung around for hours in the home with Maggie, not knowing whether her showing up is just the first of the rest of the family coming home. You know, it's getting 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, the kind of time where people start showing up. Presumably, these three random intruders didn't know that her dad was in California. They didn't necessarily know that her mom was going to work late at the restaurant that night. They didn't know when Connie might come home. They didn't know about this concert, right? They wouldn't have known that. And yet, they're just sort of hanging out at the house with Maggie for all this time. So that's certainly true that they spent significant time with her. They also announced that Maggie was burned alive, though we don't know exactly what that means. We don't know if that's as horrible as you can possibly imagine it, or if it's one of those things where she was shot, or she was stabbed, or she was beaten over the head, and she was burned alive, but she was unconscious at the time. And that's sort of what we hope. I think that's what we hope happened, but we just don't know the details. And the police indicate again that one of the suspects may have sustained burn injuries, which makes you wonder if there is some sort of DNA related to that person connected to the crime, but we don't know for sure.
And I think from this entire timeline, the biggest glaring hole in at least the information that is released to the public is, who is the person who made the call to 911? Are they included in the three suspects? Do they have DNA from this person? You know, but it just seems like a glaring hole. Obviously, we don't know everything about the investigation, and he very well may have been investigated, cleared, perhaps one of the suspects, who knows? And that might be intentional, of course, of the police to keep that out of public view. But I will tell you, reading this timeline, you can't help but have that massive hole jump out at you.
And as far as I know, to this day, we have no idea who this person was. We don't know what their connection was to the family, why they were living in the house. Man, woman, child, we don't know anything about them to this day, which is interesting that that has remained a secret for this long. There's just not a lot out there on this case. I wish there was more. And this is a case that I wish had more coverage, but maybe we'll learn more in the future. But right now, there's a lot of things I'd like to know that we don't know.
Right. And just from like an investigative perspective, the reason that person would be very interesting, besides being the one who made the phone call, is that, you know, Brett just listed a lot of things that you wouldn't know about the family if you were not intimately aware of their daily comings and goings, to know the travel schedule of the father, to know the work schedule of the mother, to know when school gets out or when someone may or may not be coming home and who would be at the home at what times, when there are school concerts, when people may be working those school concerts, those sorts of things. We'll dive more into whether we think Maggie was targeted specifically or she walked into something she shouldn't have. But you, of course, would talk to someone who lives in a home because they have firsthand knowledge of the comings and goings of someone. And especially if someone's been targeted, you typically will find a predator who lies in wait and watches their ultimate victim to know their movements, to know when the best time is to strike, to be successful and to go undetected. So that's why, from an investigative perspective, it's very interesting to know about another individual who self-professed was in the home at the time and lives there and would know many details about the family that would not be apparent to the outside world. Let's talk about some unusual aspects, because there are many to discuss. And the first is that Maggie wasn't the first member of the Long family to suffer a horrific assault. On September 27, 2006, 53-year-old Dwayne Roger Morrison entered a classroom at Platte Canyon High School and pulled out a .40-caliber Smith & Wesson handgun. He ordered the teacher and all the students, save for six girls, to go out. He lined the girls up against the chalkboard and then one by one sexually assaulted them while holding a gun to their head. Morrison released four of the hostages, but he soon stopped negotiating with police and told them that something would happen at 4 p.m. The sheriff, Fred Wegner, ordered the SWAT team in. When they breached the classroom, a firefight ensued. One of the girls, Emily Keyes, tried to run, but Morrison shot her in the head, killing her. She'd managed to send a last text message to her family that said simply, "I love you guys." Police shot Morrison three times before he shot himself in the head, and he died at the hospital. One of the hostages was Lena Long, Maggie's older sister. This event is not just a random connection. It had a material effect on the case. Locals claim that Sheriff Wegner was never the same after this incident, and that in fact, he may have blamed himself for the death of one of the girls. Years later, an officer was killed while serving a domestic violence warrant, and from that point forward, Wegner ran the office in semi-retirement from Florida. He was in the process of making that retirement permanent when Maggie was killed. There was simply no one running the ship at the time, and it may show in the investigation and its missteps. Wow, how tragic is this? I mean, Maggie's older sister, Lena's experience was just horrific and random in the sense that, this man picked six girls at random. You know, he wanted girls. He wanted to sexually assault them. But the fact that her sister was one of them seems like just a terrible, terrible coincidence that this family would suffer two such tragic events. But it's so interesting that the sheriff who was in charge at the time of this assault at the high school, instead of kind of pushing in and leaning into his job, actually pulls back. And as a result, Lena's younger sister Maggie's investigation, I think, was incredibly poorly run because Sheriff Wegner essentially just wasn't there. You know, he may have had incredible PTSD, and I don't blame him for that, but how sad that that tragic event for the family may have led to the current situation they're facing today, which is that Maggie's investigation was poorly, poorly run, and to this day is unsolved.
Yeah, I think it actually answers. It answers a lot of questions about why things went the way they did in the beginning. I don't think there was really a decider in the sheriff's office at the time. And so a lot of just strange things were happening.
And that shows, too, that I don't necessarily think there was malice or there's some sort of conspiracy going on in the police department to make sure that the killer wasn't found or something like that. I think what we're seeing is something we've pointed out in lots of other poorly handled investigations. It's not malice, but rather either inexperience or inability to run an investigation of that nature. And in this case, it sounds like there just wasn't anyone at the helm. There wasn't anyone directing the ship. And you have a decision maker for a reason. Even if they end up being bad decisions, at least they are decisions that are coherent with each other. And what you see in this case, there are a lot of random decisions that seem like different people are making calls and nothing is coherent and nothing seems to be trying to drive the investigation forward. And that might not be because anyone was trying to keep this case from being solved, but rather you kind of had this like headless chicken, you know, just running around in crazy circles. Let's talk about that Facebook post. On December 2nd, the undersheriff posted to the department's Facebook page, quote, "On-scene investigation is wrapped up. Cause and origin of the fire is inconclusive. Still no sign of her. Nobody at the fire scene." This was a huge miscommunication. Deputies had discovered Maggie's body and the coroner was on the scene before this Facebook post was made by the department. Although the coroner would not confirm it was Maggie until December 4th, it's hard to imagine why anyone would make such a statement given the facts on the ground. No sign of her? No body? You can say no sign of her. Perhaps that's shading the truth. But to say there's no body at the fire scene was objectively false at that point.
I don't really think there's any reason to make this post at all. I don't know why you would make this post. Even if you're trying to bring calm to the community, which is something the police often do, and it's an important thing that they need to do. If for some reason you thought this was a targeted attack and so there's no danger to the community, you don't say that. You know, you have, at best, you're saying this 17-year-old girl has been kidnapped, right? I mean, that's the best case here. And I don't know. I don't know why they did this. Huge mistake. But they did. And they quickly deleted the post for obvious reasons. But once again, just a police department that's kind of adrift and making huge mistakes. By Monday, December 4th, residents still didn't know what happened to Maggie, and the courts made sure they wouldn't find out. A judge of the 11th Judicial District issued a gag order in the case, meaning that law enforcement was forbidden from releasing any information. And maybe with this Facebook post, that was a good thing. Now, this is extremely unusual. Ordinarily, gag orders are issued by judges at the time of some sort of criminal proceeding to prevent the participants from talking to the media. You can imagine reasons why you might do this. You don't want to taint the jury pool, that kind of thing. Because they are a restriction on core First Amendment rights, gag orders are disfavored. They must be limited in scope and time. Either party can request a gag order, or the judge may issue them on their own. What's strange in this case is it's so early on. Almost no information had been released at this point, and there's no real reason for a judge to enter the fray. The only people who have any information are the department. The department could have just told its officers, do not release information or we will fire you. I mean, you don't need a judge issuing a gag order. So why was the gag order any more necessary in this case than in any other investigation? It's possible this is a sign that the local cops and the prosecutors really had no idea what they were doing. This entire county averages 0.5 murders a year, and never one this complicated. This may just be a sign of a department flailing. The gag order was requested by the local prosecutor. Presumably, that was requested by the police, but it's difficult to say for sure. You would hope the police were involved here, because otherwise, why is a prosecutor issuing a gag order? This is really for the police to decide how to run this investigation. If releasing information to the public is going to help solve the case, let them release information to the public. Don't gag them. But very strange set of just a very strange situation here as this case unfurls.
Yeah, I can't. I've rarely actually dealt with gag orders because there's usually a pretty high bar since it restricts your First Amendment rights. And there's usually a showing that has to be made. So I mean, we don't have the gag order application. I don't think that's available to us. And usually those are not unsealed because you're asking for the gag order for a reason. But I'm just so curious what their reasoning was for the judge to approve the order.
I tried to find it. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I did. I searched real quick and couldn't find it. So maybe someone else out there is better at legal research than we are.
Colorado has probably the worst public records search imaginable. It's a horrible website. It needs to be changed immediately because I don't know how you find anything on that website. I couldn't find anything about it. I don't think it's available anyway. It's just a mystery. It's a total mystery why they would do this. And it wasn't the first and it wasn't the last awful decision by the police on when and how to release information. They did not release information they should have, even after the gag order was lifted, for weeks, months, and even years. The police were upset that bolo went public, even though that leak might have been their only hope of actually finding out who did this. They did not have a press conference on this case until February. They did not release the first sketch and description of the vehicles until May. May! 6 months after this all went down. They didn't release all three sketches until January of 2019, which is more than a year after the murder happened. These delays, they're inexplicable. Those of you who are upset about the way information came out in Delphi, there is like a fire hose of information in Delphi compared to what these police were doing for no good reason, not sharing information with the public that could have led to leads that would have solved this case. And I hate to harp on it because what is done, but man, it's just shocking. It is shocking how poorly this investigation was handled from the beginning.
Yeah, I know. It's always hard for us to, we try not to be too hard because we don't know what the investigation's holding, but this just is completely incoherent from the public's perspective and also from our perspective working with investigators who do choose to keep things behind at times. It just doesn't make any sense. There are some things, especially for the safety of the public. If you think these people have, there are multiple people and they have murdered someone and stolen firearms with ammunition, I would say the public is at danger, but yet they kind of have this back and forth of misleading just flat out false information, and they're holding back information and delaying information that could help find very dangerous people that they're not doing. Because remember, of course, you have to balance the investigative efforts and the integrity of the investigation with the safety of the public. But here we have someone who's already killed, stolen people who've killed, and who've stolen destructive devices, and they're just not even seeming to want to move to capture them. Let's talk about Asian stereotypes. There is a stereotype of immigrants, and Asians in particular, that they do not like to use banks and they keep large quantities of cash at home. I come from an immigrant family. I have an Asian background. This is absolutely true. I've even had people say this to my face, like, oh, I guess you guys just have cash in your freezer. I'm like, what? So whether this is widespread or not, I will say that I've certainly heard this before and it's been directed at me. And the reason this comes in here is because it's so prevalent that even some organized crime rings are known to target Asian business owners for burglaries because they are known to hold lots of cash at their place of business, at their restaurants, rather than putting them into a bank. So this isn't just some stereotype and we're just repeating some stereotype. The reason it matters is it has come in as a motive for people targeting Asian immigrants specifically for this, you know, supposed fact. Let's talk about one ring in New York. The defendants were accused of rifling through cars parked at family-owned Asian restaurants to identify addresses and affixing tracking devices in order to follow the victims home, according to a complaint filed in the United States District Court in Newark. At other times, they targeted homes in heavily populated Asian communities. More than 50 residences in at least 40 states were ransacked, and jewelry, weapons, and thousands of dollars in currency from the United States and Asian countries were stolen between late 2016 and the spring of 2019. And there's another ring that was active in Colorado. This was an investigation that was dubbed the, quote, Operation Daylight. It was a 2-year investigation that started in Fort Collins with reports of 5 residential burglaries that all fit the same pattern. They happened in broad daylight, and the homeowners were all of Asian descent who owned small businesses like restaurants or salons. The residents were not home when the break-ins occurred. So we only mention this because, as we noted earlier, the Long family, They were immigrants, and they owned a series of restaurants. So whether they actually fell within this stereotype or not in terms of their money management, they certainly lived on an impressive property, 6,000 square foot home with an extra carriage house on 27 acres. And they ran businesses that operate in a lot of cash. There's a lot of cash that changes hand daily at a restaurant. And you can imagine that someone may have targeted them thinking they would be an easy target. They'd have a lot of money because they seem to have a lot of money, and they may fall into the stereotype of not dealing with banks or credit cards and instead keeping large amounts of cash from their restaurants in their home. Let's look at what was taken, though. Despite this possible motive, very little was actually taken from the Long home. The thieves stole a couple of guns, some ammo, some jade figurines, and a small green safe. That's it. None of the other valuables in the home were taken, despite the fact that the thieves were supposedly in the house for a very long time, maybe up to 3 hours.
Look, the rings targeting Asian business owners are 100% true. Those exist. They're very pernicious. They're very widespread. These two rings didn't have anything to do with this case. We can say that pretty definitively. But nevertheless, I mean, they were active around the same time. And if you catch one, there's 10 you don't catch. So it absolutely could be the case that a similar ring is operating, targeting the Long family and trying to rob their home. But if they did that, it is the least efficient, least effective robbery ever. I mean, these guys would have been there for hours and took basically nothing. And that brings us back to where we kind of started this case, which is the timing. And the timing in this case makes just so little sense. I could spend an entire episode just talking about the weird timing. I mean, let's go back on this. From what we understand, Maggie is getting to that house at around 4 p.m. Police have long believed that she interrupted a burglary. And, you know, we were operating on the theory that maybe she didn't, to give it even a little more flexibility, push it to 4:30. But assume for a second the police are right. That would mean that the perpetrators had already been in the house by 4 o'clock. We don't know how long they had been there, but they'd been there at least for a few minutes before she shows up. Now, what exactly happened at this point is entirely unclear. It's unclear if, when the police say that they spent a lot of time with Maggie, if she was sexually assaulted, if she was shot, struck, strangled, any number of things before being set on fire. But what is clear is that whatever was happening in that house was probably really loud and really destructive, and yet this upstairs tenant did not call the police until nearly 3 hours later. And this is a delay that has never been explained. From what we know of the 911 call, the tenant knew that there were people in the house because he could hear them downstairs breaking things and talking about setting fires. And in fact, I believe he called 911 multiple times. He calls at 7 o'clock, this initial thing, then the fires are set, and then he's calling again. He doesn't leave the house. He basically tells the 911 operator that he's so afraid of whatever's going on down there, he's not going to leave the house, even though the house has been set on fire. But his fear must have been new because he did not call the police until 7 o'clock. So he would have been home for the entire time of the break-in. He didn't interrupt the burglars like Maggie did. He would have had to have been there when they showed up. And it just makes you wonder why he didn't hear these three, and in fact, maybe four. There are reports that there was also a woman involved. So you have four people now in this home, and it's inexplicable. It's unclear if he's the source of the sketches, if he is the source of the description of the vehicles. We just don't know. And as I said earlier, given the timing of this initial 911 call and the arrival of the police coming down this quarter mile driveway, when they get there 11 minutes later, you would almost, they almost had to have passed these people as they were leaving in order for this to have happened the way they were told that it happened. And I'm not accusing anybody of anything. We don't know anything about this tenant, nothing. And it may be the case that the police immediately ruled him or her out, and it was so obvious to the police they didn't have anything to do with it that there was no point in even continuing to investigate. But I hope somebody looked into this guy. I hope somebody at least spent a little time just considering that maybe this is not three or four people who broke into a home and apparently left so little evidence of their existence that 5 years later, we have no idea who they are. None of them have ever talked. None of them have ever flipped on anybody else. And these 5 years that passed, they managed to come in like ghosts and escape like ghosts. They stole barely anything despite being there for 4 hours. There was someone else in the home the entire time who didn't call the police until 7:01. And then when the police arrived 11 minutes later, these people who were taking their time up to this point have just vanished into thin air. I hope someone at least took a glancing look at this person just to make sure that this wasn't a setup.
Yeah, and my only thought, you know, there's been so many weird things in this investigation. My only thought as to why they may not have looked into this person and the fact that this person has stayed a mystery, at least to the press so far, is that the family either pleaded with the police not to look into the person or said, you know, there's no need to look into this person because it's impossible. I don't know who this tenant is. If it was a close friend, if it was a family member, if it was a stranger who answered an ad. You know, it doesn't seem like they are a hard hit for money in their 6,000 square foot home that they had to rent out the place. So I wonder if the family had something to do with it and whether they take their investigative steps from the family or not is not something that we know. But I'm just trying to think realistically, you know, that just seems like such a glaring hole. If they haven't done anything, I wonder if it's because of, you know, pleading from the victim's family.
And it's entirely possible this is a family member who was living up there and they're described as a tenant, not an immediate family member, but could even be someone from overseas who was in town for a little while or maybe an exchange student. I mean, who knows what the circumstances are? And it may be completely evident to the police. They may have evidence they haven't told us that makes it 100% clear that there were three people in that house, at least, maybe four people in that house. And they know, and so there's no reason to even consider this person. And then in order to protect them and make sure that these three or four people don't come back and try and kill them because they saw their faces. I mean, maybe they're looking out the window of this upstairs room as they're all leaving and they get a good look at them. And that's where the sketches come from. I mean, that's entirely possible and maybe even probable. But I gotta say, when I heard this story, I just thought, man, that is a really long time that if this person for some reason had become obsessed with Maggie and knew mom wasn't coming home because she was going to be working late at the restaurant, dad's in California, sister's going to be at the concert, Maggie comes home at 4 o'clock, and they know they've got all this time to live out their fantasies or whatever, pretty easy to stage this robbery, just you know, load a couple things in the car, drive a few miles down the road and throw them in the lake, right? Now you have a robbery. And I don't know, set the house on fire, small fire so it's not going to burn down around you, call the police. They're not showing up as fast as you would like because you did set the house on fire. So you don't want to die in the fire. So then you call 911 again. I mean, I don't know. Total speculation. I hate to even speculate this much because it is a person who may very well be completely innocent. We don't know anything about them, so I don't feel like I'm slandering anybody. But I really hope the police at least took a little bit of a look at this person just to be sure.
But I think what is, you know, very clear is that the timing just makes no sense at all. Like, what I don't understand is where the description of the cars came from, especially if the police got a call about a break-in and a fire. So they already are being reported a crime. And if they were to pass any sort of car on this, what, quarter mile, you said, driveway, they would, of course, stop the person, even whatever. You have absolutely probable cause to be stopping a car that's exiting the scene of a supposed crime within 10 minutes of you receiving the call. So that leads me to believe that they did not pass anybody, which makes me very confused as to how they think that person got away.
And one thing people will sometimes say, because it's also the fact they didn't really steal anything is weird, right? They're burglarizing the place, but they don't steal anything. And some people said, well, it's because they were interrupted. So Maggie comes in, they're interrupted, they freak out, they kill her, they flee. But that's not what happened. They would have stayed with her for 3 hours in that home. And it's just, I mean, it's like something out of a movie. It's the kind of thing criminals in a movie do, who are just really sort of psychopathic, horrible people who just want to torture someone, and they don't even consider the fact that literally at any moment someone else could show up at that home. And you just have to almost believe that they completely threw caution to the wind on this one. They got interrupted by her, and rather than flee or kill her and flee, they just didn't. They just stayed there for another 3 hours, and it's, I don't know. I mean, the timing in this case makes no sense. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's really hard for me to, we talk about stories all the time, and it's just hard for me to formulate a story where this makes sense. Combined with the fact that you have this tenant, because, you know, the story you imagine is, like I said, some sadistic story where you have these people who Maggie walks in and now they have the perfect victim and they just decide they're going to torture her for 3 hours or whatever. But the tenant at some point would have heard that. It wouldn't be like they were being quiet about it. They weren't quiet about it at the end when they're breaking things and burning the place down. But he doesn't. He doesn't hear anything, apparently, until 7 o'clock. And it's just, I don't know. It is a weird case. And the other really weird thing about this is we know from the reporting that the tenant had a car. There were two cars parked in front of the house when the police showed up, Maggie's and the tenant's, which would mean the burglars would have seen the fact that there was a car there, which would indicate there is someone else in the home. And yet, they apparently never made any effort to find this person, to kill this person, to silence this person, nor were they concerned that this person might come down from wherever they were in the middle of their 3 or 4 hour long burglary and do something to them. For all they know, they're up there armed with another AK-47. They don't know. And yet, they do nothing. And even more importantly, I mean, maybe the burglars saw the car and thought, well, it's just a random car, doesn't mean anybody's here. But you know who would have known that somebody was there? Maggie. Maggie would have known that this tenant was in the home at the time. So what's she going to do when she walks in and she starts getting attacked? She's going to scream for help. Even if she doesn't say their name because she doesn't want to reveal the fact that they're, she is going to be screaming and making all sorts of noise. Noise that this person would have had to have heard. There is no way that Maggie walks into that house and gets attacked and doesn't scream for her life. She probably would have done that even if she didn't know there was somebody there, but she absolutely would have known that there is another person in that house who can help her. And yet, there's no call to the police until 7 o'clock. Frankly, you know, this could have been a Manson family type situation. Those of you who know about the Manson murders, there was a tenant living in the pool house where Sharon Tate was murdered. And he's like hanging out in his house listening to records all night and has no idea that right next door in the main house, everybody's getting murdered and they're screaming and yelling and hollering and everything else. He doesn't hear a thing. And he has no idea until the police literally show up the next day and arrest him because they assume he did it. If that had happened with the tenant, if the tenant literally had no idea until they start smelling smoke and the house is on fire, or when the police showed up, when the firefighters showed up, that would be one thing. But that's not what happened. They did hear things. They just didn't hear anything until 7 o'clock.
And to make things even more confusing, so nothing really happens in this case, at least to the public eye, for years. And then May of last year, May 2021, the FBI announced that they're investigating the case as a hate crime. What caused the shift from 2017 to 2021 to all of a sudden now declare this as a potential hate crime? We have no idea. But that just becomes so more mind-boggling because no longer does that seem to fit the bill of Maggie accidentally walking into a burglary, but rather if it's a hate crime, then she was targeted, or at least the family home was targeted for their race, for their immigrant status. But it certainly cuts against the theory of she walked into a burglary.
And I mean, look, I'm glad that the great thing about this is more resources for the investigation. The FBI will often help in local cases if they have the availability. But once you call it a hate crime, then it's a federal crime. Then it has original jurisdiction for the feds. A lot more focus. They're a task force that work on this kind of thing. Money. So all that's great. I'm glad they did it. Go to. Hopefully they'll figure out who did it. But the problem here, if it's a hate crime, it's a hate crime in a very sort of tenuous way. Like, is it a hate crime if it's a burglary targeting Asians and then they happen to murder someone who comes in? Is that a hate crime? I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. But as far as a targeted hate crime, the problem, no one would have known that Maggie was coming home. Remember, Maggie coming home is a random thing. She decides, I'm going to get some water and cookies. Presumably, this person who was waiting on her to get there wouldn't have known that. So if it's a targeted hate crime, it doesn't seem like it was targeted against her. It's possible that they just broke in, and whoever the first person who walked through that door, they were going to murder. And didn't matter if it was Maggie, or if it was Connie, or if it was the mom, or the tenant, even. They were going to murder that person. But I don't know what would be the piece of evidence that the police have discovered in the last 2 years that would have led them to that conclusion. I don't know. So I don't know why they made this decision. The family said they don't really know either. They're just happy for any attention on this case. But maybe because the FBI is looking into this, they'll have a break in the case. I don't know. Well, I wish we had more uplifting thoughts on this case. I mean, this is one of, there were two reasons we want to do this case. The first reason was because it's a case that deserves more attention. Maggie deserves justice. This is such a solvable case, it's frustrating. That's the second reason we're doing this, because this case is so frustrating and irritating and confusing, because if three or four people broke into a home and murdered someone, there should be so much evidence of those people that you should have caught them the day after it happened. It's just impossible that they haven't had some break in this case if there were that many people involved in this, and yet they haven't. Assuming that this is what it looks like, which is a burglary gone wrong or even a hate crime, there are so many people out there who have information that can solve this case. And the police didn't get the information out when they should have, but that doesn't mean we can't get it out now. So that's why we're doing this case. And I hope that somebody out there will have some information that maybe can break this case wide open. We are going to post the FBI poster on the website. It will have the three sketches of the men. We don't know where these sketches came from, but we'll have them, as well as the description of the items that were stolen from the home. And if you have information, you can contact your nearest FBI office or the nearest American embassy or consulate. This is being run out of the Denver field office. And obviously there's a lot of good agents out there. So hopefully they're going to make a break in this case. If you guys have any thoughts or anything you want to share and you'd rather share with us, prosecutorspod@gmail.com, @prosecutorspod for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all your social media. You can comment on YouTube or Reddit, or if you're a patron, you're enjoying this ad-free, and you can send us a message on Patreon. Well, Alice, do you have any thoughts on this before we wrap up?
No, it's just so frustrating, and I really hope there's a break in this case for the Longs, who've had just kind of two really tragic events happen in their lives, and that they can at least get some closure on Maggie's death.
No, they 100% deserve that, and I don't know. I mean, we try not to say cases are not solvable because, you know, that's depressing and you don't want to say that. This case is the complete opposite of that. It is entirely solvable. It is frustrating not because it's not solvable, but because it should have been solved by now and it hasn't been. So I am hoping there is somebody out there who has some information on this case, but, you know, this is one, it can be solved. It can be solved. It should be solved. And let's hope that this is one of those cases where at the end of the year, we're talking about, isn't it great that Maggie Long's murder has finally been solved and some perpetrators are brought to justice. But, well, that is all we have for today. We will be back next week with a new case. But until then, I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And we are the Prosecutors.
Pulled out a .4 Smith & Wesson can. Sorry. Did I say that right? Yeah.
It's a 40 caliber.
Yeah, you would think I would know that. Okay. You would think I'd know that, wouldn't you?
I'm excited about our new show. We got all these things we have to do.
I know, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's not your fault. We just have a bunch of stuff we have to do.
How did we get this first podcast off?
I don't know. We had a lot less going on, I guess.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.